It is after 9. I think I've got my label wrong on my slide up there. I think it should be, we're on lesson 5, right? We're on class number 5 today. So, y'all forgive that. But it should be lesson 5. We'll be going over chapter 6 and 7. All right, so let's go ahead and get our review underway. There's our important dates that we've got, just in case you need those. And then the outline of Ezekiel, where we've got the three sections that we're talking about. And we are in the first section where we are continuing to speak about the fall of Jerusalem, which is to come at this point. And then we'll have the other sections that we'll be getting to. But of course, our main theme and our refrain that keeps coming up is, they shall know that I am the Lord. By way of review, I think I've got the wrong file up there. That may be why it was labeled wrong. So if y'all will give me just a second, let me get that swapped because... Maybe not. I think I'm good. So Ezekiel, when we're introduced to Ezekiel, he is approached by the throne / chariot of God. He is impressed, would be a massive understatement. Ezekiel is overwhelmed by the vision of the glory of God. And so he spends all this time describing what he's seeing and then lets us know we're looking at the glory of God, the likeness of the glory of God. And so, and we see God coming in vengeance, really. It's kind of almost a war chariot. It's an aggressive picture that we're seeing of God. And so Ezekiel is scared out of his wits at this point by seeing this. As a result, Ezekiel is giving the job of a watchman. Okay, what was the job of a watchman? To watch and warn. Okay, he's not to fight the battle. He's not to be the savior, right? He's the messenger. He's the watchman. He's the one to give them the warning. He sees danger coming. He lets them know what's happening. And so that is what Ezekiel's goal is going to be throughout his ministry, is to let Israel know what God needs them to know. And then, as we talked about last week, he is given the assignment. He's to stay silent, but he is to act out the siege of Jerusalem. And there's no mystery here. He tells us exactly what he's demonstrating and what he's doing. He builds the little model, he inscribes Jerusalem on it, whether it was with words or a map or something or another. It's a tile, a brick. It's representing Jerusalem, builds a siege around it with the different mechanisms involved in that. And then he has to lay on his side for a number of days, 430 in total. 390 representing Israel, the sins of Israel, and 40 representing the sins of Judah. And we talked about the fact that we really don't know what that exactly maps out to, but the idea is that Israel's seem to be greater than Judah's and a significant amount of time there. And so he is to lay on his side representing the sins of Israel and Judah. And so when all that finally gets done, he is then told to shave his head, shave his beard, stack all that hair, weigh it out, separate it into three parts, and so a third is to be thrown into the fire, a third is to be chopped up with a sword, and a third is to be scattered to the wind. And then just a few hairs is grabbed and placed up in his tunic or whatever you want to call it. All right? And then even some of those are then pulled and burned as well. So, and then he goes through to tell us, spells out that what those mean, you know, a third would be killed in the actual siege, a third would be chased down, killed, all that kind of thing, and a third would be scattered. And of course, we have the small remnant that would be spared. and I think one of the key phrases that we see in this chapter, let's see, what I guess that would be chapter 5, is, I am against you. Who is speaking that statement? God. That is not a statement that you want to hear from God. And that's what they hear. They get the words, I am against you. And so that is a dire situation to be in. And so that's kind of what God is wanting us to see. We're given some details about this. The cannibalism gets mentioned, different things, how bad this siege is going to be. I listed Leviticus chapter 26 up there. That is where when Moses is talking to the people, he gives them the warning of the things that will happen if they do not stay with God. And it even goes that far as to mention the horrible condition, the point to where they're engaging in cannibalism, even at that point. So these folks have been told. This is not new information. They knew what would happen. They've been told. They may have completely forgotten, but they've been told. They've had the information this entire time. And so it's come about. And we'll talk about that some more here in a little bit. So let me ask you this, and especially thinking about Ezekiel's role that he's been given. All these things that Ezekiel's doing, all these things he's acting out, and we'll be doing even more things later, is it going to change anything? I mean, do what? Well, yeah, their heart's not in it. But the fact is, God has spoken on this matter. That's not changing now. You know, we had other prophets that were trying to get things to change. That didn't work. It's done now. So, Jerusalem is going to fall. There's no relenting. God is done. So why is Ezekiel wasting his time, Bill?
Well, he's not wasting his time. For one thing, the people are not going to be saved, not going to be able to say, well, I wasn't warned, I didn't know about this. Another thing is most likely some individual, maybe not the nation, but some individual did change. And another thing, we can look at it today and see the principle of God, following God or not following God. So there are three reasons at least.
Yeah, I think that's true too. And something that I know Marty Pickup mentioned was, you know, what is God asking these prophets to do, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Daniel, that he hadn't really been doing when it comes to some of the other, even the big names? What are these guys doing that Elijah and Elisha haven't done? Do what? No, not really. They're writing it down. We know about these other guys, but they didn't necessarily write a book like Ezekiel has done, like Daniel has done. There's a bigger purpose here, okay? I mean, like I say, we're doing all this and it's not going to change anything. But as Ezekiel has already mentioned, as God is telling him these things, he says, they will know a prophet has been among you. So like you were mentioning, they have no excuse. They know, they've been told. But he's doing all these things. He's predicting things. That was the purpose of a prophet giving predictions, right? I mean, because, you know, obviously when you think of prophet, you just automatically go to predicting future, just kind of the way we've always kind of thought. But we know that's not what a prophet is. What is a prophet? Mouthpiece for God. They're delivered God's word. Now, a lot of times it was predictions. But how are we to know that a prophet was a true prophet? If what you said came to pass. And so I think that's one thing Ezekiel's doing here. He's establishing himself as a true prophet. He is giving these predictions. He's giving these things, I mean, down to the detail of how things are going to go down, so that when they do, okay, maybe we need to listen to this crazy guy that's laying in the street or laying on the ground. And so I think that's one of the biggest reasons, Greg. Yeah, and that's kind of where I was going to with the writing it down. The future generations are going to know how we got here and why we got here and know the information that they should have had or that they should have listened to. And so, obviously Ezekiel is not wasting his time by doing it, or God is not wasting his time with Ezekiel is probably the way I should say that. And so, anyway, I just kind of wanted to make sure we kind of went back over that, because it kind of seems like a hopeless thing he's doing. He's doing all these things, trying to show these people, but nothing can change at this point. I mean, God has said numerous times, it's happening, it's over, my mercy's done. And so, Mark. Yeah, because, we've mentioned the Jonah situation a couple times already. But, you know, as a kid, the fish swallowing him was the biggest, coolest thing, right? But now the coolest thing about Jonah is the fact that God changed his mind. And so that blows my mind. And the example with Moses, the same way. The fact that God was his heart was touched, and he changed his mind. And, as you were bringing up with Noah, when the door shut, the door was shut. Gave you a chance up to this point. At this point, the door shut.
I think it said God shut the door.
Yeah, God shut the door on the ark, and God has shut the door here. Anyway, Greg. Right. So, I mean, another example, they've been told that in this situation has been predicted. Bill.
Even though God is not going to change his mind at this point, if someone had shown up at the ark just before the door was closed, I'm pretty sure Noah would have let him in.
Yeah, I think it's a whole different situation on the individual level.
Individual, yeah.
Yeah, I think on the individual level, yes. I mean, and I think, you know, Ezekiel is talking to the good grapes, right? So, these are the people, and we'll actually talk about that some here in chapter 6 and 7 about the attitude of these people. So, I think on the individual, this is talking about the big scale. Leon?
Oh. An aspect of this is that our God is a just God.
Yes.
Receive justice. Even we today will receive
Yes, and as we'll see in probably next week, God has just cause for doing what he is doing. And so, yes, God is just, and sometimes we forget about that. We never need to forget God's mercy, but we can't forget his justice either. So, yes, I appreciate that. Yeah,
it's amazing how obstinate they were and how painstakingly patient the Lord was with them to say what Stanley just said, justice will be done. And it was done now.
Right. Right, and that, and even here in the doom and gloom section, we're still getting the nuggets about the remnant that's going to be there. So, all right, we better move on, or we'll never even remotely get close. So, let's go over our questions real quick from lesson 4, chapters 4 and 5. And I wrote it down like somewhere, Cheryl. But do you have it handy, Brady? All right. So I guess that comes to Russell or Sue. And I think I did, I made a grammatical error. I ended on a preposition. I apologize. I did fix it in my original, so it will not be there for future generations. For those that care. For those that care, I did correct my mistake later. All right, Russell.
What does Ezekiel build a model of? The model was of Jerusalem. Now, do you want me to go on and talk about the siege works and the metal?
The siege of Jerusalem was basically what I was looking for, yeah. All right, number 2. Yes, the iniquity of Israel and of Judah. Brad?
What did Ezekiel look at God's instructions?
Okay, yeah, he was concerned about his purity of his entire life. You know, I was thinking about this, I was like, remember when Paul told Timothy to take wine for his stomach's sake? You know, obviously that is an acceptable use of wine, right? But if you've gone your entire life just abstaining from that, that would be a hard thing to do even then, right? So that kind of, it's not exactly a parallel, but it was kind of a thought that went through my mind when I was thinking about that again. All right, Randy? Okay, all right, number 5. Yes, all right, number 6. All right, shave it, divide it, chop it, spread it, burn it. All those things that we talked about in detail there. All right, number 7. Go ahead. And I really should have included 6 in my reference there. Says that that Israel rebelled even more than the nations around them. So, all right, number 8.
Rocky, may I make a comment about verse 5?
Sure. Right, yeah, and we kind of, you know, mentioned that in an introduction about how they were in kind of in the middle of all those power struggles, and that was because of where they are geographically. My question was targeted, meant to be for verse 6. It was kind of the comparing to the other nations, and so I apologize for the typo. All right, number 8. Where are we at? Right, that's not who you want against you. All right, number 9.
What will be the result of God's wrath? He will cause his fury to rest upon them. He would be avenged, and they shall know that the Lord has spoken.
All right. Yeah, and on that one, I should have included 14 as well about how they will be a waste and a reproach. God's wrath is going to be complete and utter. All right. Any questions on the questions? All right, so we will move on into lesson 5. We're going to try to get chapters 6 and 7, and we're going to have to do it in a hurry. Next week we will try to pick up a few more chapters. We'll probably try to get about 4 chapters next week if things go well. In chapter 6, Ezekiel is going to kind of cover some more of the same ground, but kind of from a little bit different angle. And we'll be looking a little bit more at the land there for a little bit, and then we'll go into some other things. So, in chapter 6, get my Bible over there. We're not going to have time to do the reading like I would like to do, but in the first 7 verses, Ezekiel, he's told to look toward Jerusalem. So from where he's at, which direction would that be?
West.
Yeah, west generally, probably maybe a little south. I'd have to look at the map again to make sure, but I know west for sure. So he's looking to the west, and he is told to prophesy to the mountains. All right, so are the mountains going to benefit from this prophecy? No, I mean, obviously we're using some poetic language here as far as prophesying to the mountains, but I mean, he is going to be talking about that, about them, but using a little bit of personification there with the mountains themselves. And if you remember in Micah chapter 6, he kind of uses some similar language there when he speaks to the mountains. But what he's kind of getting at with this section is the destruction of the high places. All right, so what were the high places?
Place for pagan worship.
Worship, yeah, they were places of worship. And so what did they worship in these high places? Idols, all right. Who or what else did they worship there?
Sometimes they tried to worship Jehovah there.
Okay, sometimes they tried to worship God. Now that wasn't authorized. That wasn't what they were supposed to do, but that worship was placed there at times. And it still was profane worship because it was not the way it was supposed to be done. But yeah, so they worshiped a little bit of everything on these high places. They were considered sacred by all the other nations and things like that, and should have been considered abominable, basically, by the children of Israel. I did grab a hold of this picture. This is a pretty famous high place that we actually see. Those of you who are familiar with that, you'll know that this is at Dan. This is one of the high places that Jeroboam set up. And so I just threw that up there as a visual reference. But so the destruction is to come to these high places. And did if you happen to have read this, what is to happen to the idolaters, the people that have done this worship, the people that are doing all this? What is going to be going on with them? Do it. That's right. Their corpses are going to be just scattered around these things. Their bones are just going to be scattered around. And so That meant that these people were not going to be having a proper burial. But they're just going to be laid out and scattered there all around. So this is not a place that God looks upon favorably, is it? So the judgment is pronounced against the high places and making sure that those get cleaned out. So as we've gone through the kings, as we had different kings, particularly in Judah, what would always get mentioned about the high places? The vast majority of the time, even the good kings, when they would come and they would clean house and do what they're supposed to do and get things going, but they did not remove the high places. God's removing the high places. His cleansing is going to be complete. He's taking care of business. And so the high places, you know, he's been struggling to get them to get rid of these high places forever. He says, all right, that's fine. I'll take care of it. It's kind of like when you're trying to get your kids to do something and they never do it. And then you finally go, fine, I'll take care of it. Which is not saying, you don't worry about it, right? That you're saying it out of anger. God's saying, I'm taking care of it. I'm done trying to get you to do it. So anyway, so this is kind of that complete judgment on the high places there. Any thoughts on the high places before we kind of move on? Right. That's not a, oh, okay, good. I don't have to worry about that. That's a, oh, no. I need to make myself scarce now. Yeah. All right. So now here's our little nugget of hope that we have that keeps coming through there. In verses 8 through 10, we do find out that there is, you know, again, we're reminded that there will be a remnant. But what's interesting here is that he mentions what the remnant will understand. And so if they go through all this, they are going to understand. And I like the language in the New King James where God says, they will see that I am crushed by this. You know, and God lets us know that he's hurt sometimes, but he don't do it real often. And right here's one of the points. One of the times he vulnerable is not the word, obviously, for God. But he lets us know that his heart is crushed. He lets us know the disappointment, the how hurt he is. And, you know, it compares it to the situation in an adulterous situation, how the other spout how the innocent party is just so crushed and disappointed and let down by all that, and so God is expressing that they will understand where he's at, this remnant, after all this gets through and they see all these things, that now they will understand his view, and his they will be able to empathize with him a little bit more, or I don't know if empathize, maybe sympathize, but whatever the case, they will understand better. And it says that they will loathe themselves for the sin. Remember how angry Ezekiel was earlier? I mean, it's like they will start seeing this. They will understand how bad they are. And you know how you feel when you know you've hurt somebody. And you just literally, that word is a strong word, loathe yourself. And so that is where the remnant is going to feel. That's where the remnant is going to be emotionally. Let's look. Can anybody turn to Zechariah right quick? Zechariah chapter 13. Okay. Will you read verse 9? Okay, so When you put something through the fire, what happens to it? You purify it. You get rid of all the impurities, right? So this is the remnant that is coming through that fire that is making it. They will be purified. That's the purpose of the remnant. They're the purified leftovers. I hate saying leftover, but they're what's left. There's what they're there, and they will understand this. They have a purpose, and so they are the purified thing from which we will rebuild what's going forward. And it's kind of like I mentioned, you know, after the children of Israel wandered through the wilderness, and all those above 20 died out. At least for a generation, we seem to have had a really strong, good people that were willing to do what they needed to do because they had been through that fire. They had been weeded out. They were the remnant. Now, they were almost as numerous as they were before, but they had been purified. And so we had a good, strong. And so that's what God's doing here. We're going to come out with a stronger nation once we get to the other side. Yes, they almost went to the other extreme because, you know, we end up with Pharisees and different things like that to where they're so bound to tradition that they're forgetting to love God. And so, it was effective. That this purification, as history shows, was effective. That crossed my mind too the other day. Anything else? All right, so kind of moving into the next section there, 11 through 17. God is stressing again how complete this destruction is going to be. Everybody's going to be touched by this. And of course, just kind of another visual here, the land will be left desolate. It will be worse than a desert. It's going to be just a complete wilderness, but they will know that I am the Lord. There's not going to be any mistake. There's not going to be any questions. They will know that I am the Lord. All right, so that's kind of how we end on chapter 6. Any thoughts before we move on? All right. So now in chapter 7, we see kind of a lot of the same material being covered, but now we've kind of got it a little bit more in a song, poem format, I guess you would say. And I find that kind of interesting because, you know, we've talked about the absolutes up to this point, and so now we're kind of going to be dealing with the emotion of things. And that, you know, the point of poetry and song and things like that is it can express emotion so much more effectively a lot of the times. A song can really stir emotions when it's needed. When needed, a poem, just kind of that meter or whatever it is, it kind of helps drive home the emotion that is trying to be across there or being put across. And so that's kind of what I'm seeing here is that we're going to see a little bit more of God's emotion and the resulting emotions that's going to be going through as we go forward. I will go ahead. I'll read verses 1-9, and we won't be able to do that going forward, but I will read that part. All right, chapter 7, starting at verse 1. Moreover, the word of the Lord came to me, saying, "And you, son of man, thus says the Lord God to the land of Israel, an end. The end has come upon the four corners of the land. Now the end has come upon you, and I will send my anger against you. I will judge you according to your ways, and I will repay you for all your abominations. My eye will not spare you, nor will I have pity, but I will repay your ways, and your abominations will be in your midst. Then you shall know that I am the Lord. Thus says the Lord, a disaster, a singular disaster, behold, it has come. An end has come. The end has come. It is dawned for you. Behold, it has come. Doom has come to you, you who dwell in the land. The time has come. A day of trouble is near. and not of rejoicing in the mountains. Now upon you I will soon pour out my fury and spend my anger upon you. I will judge you according to your ways, and I will repay you for all your abominations. My eye will not spare, nor will I have pity. I will repay you according to your ways, and your abominations will be in your midst. Then you shall know that I am the Lord who strikes. And so this is not a happy poem. This is not a happy song. And so I think we've kind of touched on it already, but is God's mercy limitless? God has placed a limit, but he has a limit. There's a certain point to where, okay, we're done. You know, he's, as we talked about, he's closing that door, and his mercy is done. Now, has God extended mercy up to this point? Blatantly. 1,000 years. maybe not exact, but, you know, he has extended mercy again and again and again. He's sent prophets. He's done all these things. He's delivered them from other nations. He's extended mercy, but at this point, he's done. And the mercy is spent, and so it's time for justice. So, but in verse 3, he says, I will send my anger against you. Again, that's a strong statement that we won't be in. Verses 4 and verses 9, I will not have pity. There is no more pity. I'm done. The pity is gone. Verse 7, doom has come to you. Verse 8, I will soon pour out my fury. But then in verse 9, what will you know? I am the Lord that is striking against you. And so he's continuing with that thought. Okay, anything else on that? Yeah.
Everything in God's creation ultimately does his will. All the laws of physics does his will. Everything in the animal kingdom does his will. Everything does his will.
Right.
And it's the only creation that doesn't do God's will.
Right. And especially these men who are his chosen people. Yeah. Kind of makes you depressed to be human sometimes, doesn't it? But there's good. There's the good side. All right. So going forward, in 10 through 27, we kind of get some of the details of this desolation that's going to be coming about. Verse 11 talks about the violence and the pride blossoming. Just, you know, those are two things that are not supposed to be blossoming. You know, it mentions a rod. You know, a rod's dead. Pride and violence, that should be dead, but yet it's blossoming. And so, it's just everything's doing right the opposite. And this violence and this pride is leading them to a judgment that is so complete that there's nobody left to even mourn them. And so that's how intense and how complete that this judgment is that they are bringing upon themselves. And so when the trumpet gets blown for them to fight, there's nobody to fight. There's no point in fighting. It's a done deal. It's over with. And so in verse 18, it mentions the shame that's going to be involved. The mourning, you know, the being, I don't know if it mentions, I can't remember if it mentions sackcloth, but I believe it mentions the shaving and see, let me, don't let me misspeak. Say that again. Okay, so yeah, so it mentions, yeah, and the baldness on all their heads. And so we talked about that with the shaving last week. That was a sign of shame, the shaving. And so we're talking about the shame in the mourning. Verse 19 talks about how pointless their currency is going to be. All their gold is going to be useless. Proverbs chapter 11, verse 4, if somebody gets there, read that real quick. I will if I get there. I hear my time slip quickly slipping away. But yeah, Proverbs 11 and verse 4, riches do not profit in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. So this is the day of wrath that we're talking about. And of course, the riches are not doing us any good. Verse 20 talks about, alludes to the treasure of the temple, all the fine things in the temple, the parts of the temple. Now that is going to be profaned. That is going to be taken by strangers and used even in idols and things like that. So, you know, that's the ultimate slap in the face when the things of the temple are being used for these type of things and being used by these foreigners and strangers. And in verse 23, we talk about how Jerusalem, you know, it should have been the model of morality as we were talking about being in the center of the nations, but yet they end up being a city of violence and being right the opposite of what they need to do. Verse 26, it says, they will seek a vision from a prophet. So remember these prophets that were telling them this is only going to last a couple years and all these things that Jeremiah had to deal with and that attitude that, you know, they're going to be, as this stuff starts happening, they're going to be looking for that kind of news. But God's cutting everything off. I'm done giving you information. I've given you what I need to do. And so there's no more guidance. There's not going to be anything to help them in this time. And of course, in verse 27, we find out that the royalty is going to be right there with the common people. There's no difference there either. They're going to be set among the common people. They're not going to be any better off. But what will they know? That I am the Lord. And of course, as we wrap up, you know, we have a real similar warning in Romans 2. So we'll flip over just real quick as we close. Romans 2, beginning in verse 5. But in accordance with your hardness and your impenitent heart, you are treasuring up for yourself wrath in the day of wrath and revelation of the righteous judgment of God, who will render each one according to his deeds, eternal life to those by patient continuance in doing good, seek for glory, honor, and immortality. But to those who are self-seeking and do not obey the truth, but obey unrighteousness, indignation and wrath, tribulation and anguish on every soul of man who does evil, of the Jews first and also of the Greek. But glory, honor, and peace to everyone who works what is good, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. So we have a very similar warning that applies to us even today. All right, next week we'll try to do chapters 8 through 11 if all goes well.